Welcome to Blah Blah Sports. I'm your host, Benny Penn, alongside my partner in crime, Sean Smith. Sean, what's going down?
Oh, there's a lot going down. A lot of NFL stuff going down, but also some baseball stuff going down. So let's get right to it.
We're going to start in the NFL with our first football topic. Sean, we were talking about this going into the podcast. It's been a little bit of a crazy year, and there have been some teams that have just come kind of came out and surprised us. What's a team that kind of surprised you so far in the season?
Well, I think it's hard to argue that the most surprising team might be the Carolina Panthers. I mean, they are undefeated right now. They're still undefeated as we speak right now. And they're doing it without, like, a real good passing game. They don't have many weapons on offense. They're running the ball a lot. In fact, they lead the league in rushing attempts.
I think they're kind of – them and the Denver Broncos are kind of very symbolic as to how this year has gone, which is more of you have to have a good defense. And I think they're really kind of the bearers of gifts from their defense. I mean, you're led by Luke Kuechly, one of the best linebackers, if not the best linebacker in the NFL right now. And the other thing I think is they've had – Can we agree they've had a fairly weak schedule so far in relevance to how the NFL's played out?
That was actually going to be my next point, is the fact that they've only beaten one winning team so far this season. That would be the Green Bay Packers. And, you know, all things considered, I've been saying this for a while, just waiting for them to get the pin, you could say.
They're not the
best team in the NFC, if not the NFL. The 9-0 record is very, very misleading.
Yeah, there's a lot of holes to be poked in that. You look at, and even like the team they beat, the Packers, they've dropped their last three. They kind of look like they're starting to have some issues. So, I mean, I think we're all in agreement the Packers are going to end the season with a above 500 record. But the way it looks right now, they're just having too many issues to buy in as them being anything more than what they are right now, which is a wild card team.
Yeah, and I think what helps the Packers is the fact that there's really not a whole lot of teams that are going to beat them out for that wild card spot. It's right now, it's the Packers and the Falcons who are going to be in that wild card. And the odd man out right now is Seattle, looking at a 4-5 record and basically two games back from both wild card teams.
Yeah, being that team that lost the Super Bowl, they lost a lot more in the offseason as well. You look back at some of the players that left them, they had the issues with Cam Chancellor. Marshawn Lynch wasn't necessarily 100% at the beginning of this year. They just look like a completely different. I remember I was watching ESPN, and someone, often watch ESPN, just, you know, I'm not a big fan of it, but someone kind of hit the nail on the head. They look like they've lost their swagger.
Well, I think a big portion of what's going on there in Seattle is the fact that they've blown 5 fourth quarter leads this season, and they have 5 losses. So theoretically, going into the fourth quarter, they've had the lead in almost every game, and they blew each one. And, you know, there's a lot of finger pointing going around, a lot of defensive players not getting along. You have a new defensive coordinator in there. There was some talk today of maybe possibly some of the players on Seattle don't trust Pete Carroll as their head coach because of the call in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
It's just a weird situation going down, and I don't want to compare it to what happened with the Jim Harbaugh situation, but I feel compelled to compare it to the Jim Harbaugh situation.
I see where you're going, but like, here's the thing with the Jim Harbaugh situation is that the players supported him. The front office didn't. So there was that constant battle of, you know, he wanted to get his guys in there.
But
and,
now the
yeah.
The players might not be, and it's kind of like we're looking at
the same cake upside down. Like, we're seeing like all these issues at the bottom, and the front office is kind of like, well, he's our guy. He got us a Super Bowl. We're going to stick with him. And the players are like, no, he's not as good as you think he is. And I'm inclined to, based off of what I've seen out of Pete Carroll over the history of his coaching career, even going back to what he was doing in the 90s, comes back here. He was more of the prosperer of having talent versus actually being an effective coach. That's just me, because the call in the Super Bowl reflects so much as to like the like where his mind is, if you can kind of see where I'm going.
Yeah, I can see where you're going with that. But at the same time, you know, to have a defense that is supposed to be quote unquote elite, even though I hate that term.
Yes.
giving up that many fourth quarter leads is just unacceptable. You know, your offense is doing the best they can considering Jimmy Graham has been more of a hindrance for their team than anything else.
That was another surprise. When they first got him, I was thinking, oh, their offense is set now. You know, they really never had elite, or I would even say
they didn't
like
want to change their system.
They didn't want to change their system, but they've never really had marginal receivers to begin with. I mean,
they were doing it all with a power running game and occasional deep throws.
Yes.
And that's it. Like and like screen passes, and that was it. You know, you throw Jimmy Graham in, you want to have sort of a slot or downfield
vertical game. Yeah.
And they haven't done that because that's not what they do. They don't want to conform to fit Jimmy Graham's needs.
Yeah. They want him to come in and fit the system. Jimmy Graham is basically, he's not going to block for you because he's basically given up that aspect of his game. He's an elite deep wide. You know, I hate that term, but he's one of the better deep threats in the NFL. And they're basically telling him, nah, you're not going to do that anymore. You're just going to have to get open with shorter routes.
Or just block for Marshawn Lynch.
Or block for Marshawn Lynch. We're going to use, you know, we need the name factor here. That's not what Jimmy Graham is. See, what they've been able to do over the history is they always had that tight end that was kind of like a dual threat, maybe favoring blocking a little bit, and they've been able to get away with that. But they haven't been able to do that this year because they want Jimmy Graham to be more of a blocker. He's a receiver, and his blocking's awful. So this is what happens when you don't set a system right with the right players, basically. I hate when teams do this. They have a fine team as it is, a team that's capable of making the playoffs. It's tough to kind of sit here and predict what the Seahawks could have been if there weren't as many changes that have had impact on this team. But it's kind of reflective as to why teams have a system and build around the system instead of having players and building around building a system for the players, because then you get all these mismatches.
Well, realistically, the trade for Jimmy Graham looks like a complete failure at this point, mainly because one of their weaknesses has been their offensive line. Russell Wilson's just running for his life the entire game, most of the time. And, you know, I think a guy like Unger, if he would have stayed there, could have really helped him out. And guess what? The draft pick that they sent over to St. Louis, or I'm sorry, not St. Louis.
New Orleans.
I forget what the player's name is, but he's actually been one of the bright spots on their defense, which is still awful, but, you know.
we'll get to their defense in a second, but that's pretty much the surprise. Like, the surprises, the other surprises for me have been the Cardinals and the Vikings. I kind of knew the Cardinals were going to be a good team. I didn't think 7-2 at this point.
They are also benefiting from a weakened Seattle team.
And same with the Vikings. They're benefiting from a rather tender schedule. They're like the meat of their schedule is more at the back end. But right now, they could be a 10-6 team. They could end up, you know, if the way the Packers are going, they could end up winning their division.
Yeah, I mean, and they still have they end the season against Green Bay. So, you know, it could come down to the end right there.
And, you know, it just been like this year in the NFL has been so weird because like, the top teams, we're not too convinced with any team outside of maybe Cincinnati and New England at this point that they're actually a competitor.
Do you actually believe in Cincinnati?
They've beaten two teams with winning records. They're my surprise for the
Ooh,
Aces. That's more than Carolina can say. That's more than Carolina can say, and that's both more than what the Cardinals and Vikings say. The Vikings, the only teams that the Cardinals and Vikings have played with winning records, Cardinals they lost to Pittsburgh, and the Vikings lost to Denver.
Tell me, Benny, who were those two teams that Cincinnati beat with a winning record?
They were Pittsburgh, or excuse me, they beat I believe Pittsburgh, and I have to
because there is another myself. There is no other one.
There is another one. Yes, there is.
No, there is not. Seattle was, I believe, 3-4 at the time, 2-4. So they did not have a winning record when they beat them.
They had Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh, I'm more in favor of believing Pittsburgh.
Yes, they beat Pittsburgh.
Buffalo is the other team. They're currently 5-4. The thing is, though, with Cincinnati, their offense is played very well. Their defense is very just keeps them in the game, and their offense scores enough points for them to win. It's kind of, they have a formula down that's been very successful. I'm not saying they're going to be a Super Bowl team because I don't think any team is going to beat New England in the playoffs. But I could see a scenario where Cincinnati, looking at the back end of their schedule, they play Arizona, they have Pittsburgh again, they're on the road at Denver. We don't know where Denver's going to be. Arizona, 7-2, they've had the benefit of the doubt with a weakened schedule. And Pittsburgh, they've already beaten Pittsburgh. They've already taken care of Pittsburgh at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh comes into Paul Brown Stadium. They've had quarterback issues as well in Pittsburgh. I can see a scenario where Cincinnati rounds out the year undefeated.
I think their schedule going down towards the end is too difficult for them to go undefeated. But I will say that, you know, Cincinnati, if they keep up their winning ways, they won't be out of the first round of the playoffs because, you know, they'll be getting that bye. So they'll have to wait until the second round of the playoffs to get booted out.
Yeah. And, you know, they've been a notoriously poor playoff team, but I think this is the year where they can at least get a win. I see them in the conference game against New England. I don't know where Denver's going. Denver is that team that's kind of trending towards my poor surprise. I was kind of pleasantly surprised at first with the way their defense played, and I thought, all their offense has to do is score 21 points. How hard is that? Well, apparently it's very difficult if you're a Bronco.
Yeah, you can't. Your quarterback can't throw the ball, and you have no running game. How do you score points other than field goals?
The way Peyton Manning has regressed, it's almost been painful to watch. Has it not? Like, as a kid that grew up, and both of us grew up basically watching Peyton Manning shatter one record after the other after the other. He was a part of that great trio with Brett Favre, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, all these great quarterbacks playing. Peyton Manning was like soaring head and tails above the rest. And it's kind of painful to watch him not be able to throw the ball any longer than 30 yards.
Yeah, he's had a couple passes this year that were a little deep. I'm not saying that he connected with all of them, but I think it goes to show you he's starting to break down physically. He says he still doesn't have a feeling in his fingers, which is not something you want your starting quarterback to say. But, you know, he has been a hindrance to the team, and the fact that they do have 7 wins is really a testament to the defense, who has been keeping them into all these games. The problem is defense can only last so long. Eventually, you're going to run into these teams that have, you know, huge offensive. You could say, you know, Green Bay, who has problems themselves, should be an offensive juggernaut. But realistically, what kind of offensive juggernauts has Denver ran into? So far, really no one. No real offensive juggernaut. Now, I mean, they're going to have Tom Brady in a couple weeks.
Yes, and that'll be the big test for their defense.
I think, honestly, I think this week against the Bears might be a test, too, especially if Matt Forte's back. You have Alshon Jeffrey, who's going to be tested with Aqib Talib. You never know. But, you know, coming down the schedule, you know, the Raiders are getting better. They still have to face the Chargers twice, even though that they're missing two key guys on offense. And they still got to go against Cincinnati. And the Steelers. So, you know, Denver's not out of the water. I'm not saying that they're not going to make the playoffs, but I'm not saying they're not going
to
make the playoffs.
They're starting to have the look of a team. Again, this is kind of like, it's kind of weird because they kind of mirror. Remember that one year where Denver went like, they had like a really good record in that first half. They were like, I want to say like kind of around where they were like 6-3, and they finished the year 8-8. Remember that year?
Was that one of the Kyle Orton years?
That was one of the Kyle Orton years, yeah. It kind of has that feel where their defense is okay, but I just don't know if their offense is going to play up to the level to get them wins.
I think what helps them is the fact that their division is so mediocre. You know, the next team up is 4-5, and that's Kansas City, who just beat the Broncos. So, you know, they could realistically only win a couple more games down the stretch and still probably take this division.
Now, another part of the Denver Broncos has been they're a part of a trend of teams now that are starting to make quarterback changes. Now, I will say that the Pittsburgh quarterback change, the Dallas quarterback change, and recently the Philadelphia Eagles quarterback change have all been the result of injuries. But with Pittsburgh, Ben Roethlisberger, when he's played, he's been effective, but you're also starting to see Landry Jones. He's looking, or I believe that's Landry Jones. Landry Jones. Landry Jones is starting to look effective. Michael Vick, of course.
Jones never really did all that much other than the one game he had. He had a bunch of targets at Martavis Bryant, and he went off. Other than that, Jones really hasn't impressed me enough to be a starter.
Well, all I'm saying is we're starting to look at the Steelers as maybe down the road they have an option outside of Roethlisberger. And, you know, with the way Roethlisberger is, you know, he's starting to get old. He's not as mobile as he used to be.
He's not Peyton Manning. He's not that old.
He's not Peyton Manning. I'm not even going to say that. But I'm starting to say he's starting to take a seat. I think he took a small step back this year, and we're starting to see his injury issues. I'm not asking you if we ever see a circumstance where Pittsburgh goes to Landry Jones. But I'm saying he's a part of one of those quarterback changes that may be a little bit more permanent than what we think. Especially with the health of Big Ben right now.
I still think you have another solid 5 years out of Ben. I wouldn't be worrying about quarterback play anytime soon.
I'd take the more low side at three seasons of 24 to 28 touchdown passes. His interceptions are starting to climb a little bit.
I think he'll be fine.
I'm not sitting here saying he's gonna completely tank and he's not gonna be good. I'm just saying that from what I've seen, Pittsburgh has an incentive to maybe go to the younger guy.
Why? There's no
reason.
A couple
extra games to give Ben that rest.
He's had that. They went to Vic, which didn't work, and then they went to Landry Jones, who was just meh. So Big Ben is the quarterback for this team. He's the perfect guy to run the offense. It's a shame they don't have Le'Veon Bell anymore, because then they would have been – imagine if they had him with Ben at the same time and Antonio Brown.
Right now they'd be the third best team in the AFC.
And they're still technically a playoff contender, even at 6-4.
As of right now, they're a wild card team that more than likely is going to absolutely trounce whoever they're going to play in the first round. So they're fine, but again, they're a part of this trend in the NFL with Dallas. We have Denver, Philly, Cleveland, San Fran, and then a couple other teams that have made quarterback changes. It's interesting because going into last year, we thought most teams had their quarterback position set and it was a lot of backups. You know, even going as far down to like the Jets, they were all in on Geno Smith
everyone could have told you that was a mistake even before that was they a mistake. Went for it.
Again, what we're starting to see now is a lot of quarterback jobs are starting to open up, and that goes to the quarterback market. Colin Kaepernick replaced by Blaine Gabbert, his market has to start to kind of maybe be picking up a little bit. I would assume Philadelphia has made a phone call.
Well, no, because the way his contract is structured is they have to cut him. If they trade him, then the team that picks him up has to take care of the rest of his contract with all the incentives and guaranteed money. No team's going to do that because they signed him into a ridiculous deal and it's not worth it. If they cut him after the season's over, you get him for barely anything, and then you can tool him without taking a cap hit. It's the smartest plan. No team's going to not take that offer if they need a quarterback.
Yeah, and the same can be said about the whole RG3 situation.
I think Kaepernick's situation is just a little bit different than RG3, just because RG3, even though we think he's healthy. I don't know if he is or not. But,
doesn't matter because he hasn't played well. But yeah,
well, he hasn't played at all. Like, he hasn't played in a year and a half. Kaepernick has played this year, so at least he's had some time on the field. I think I don't know if that's going to entice anybody, but I think Kaepernick's looking better off in free agency than RG3 will.
And the other interesting thing about the whole situation is that one quarterback doesn't have the backing of the ownership. Kaepernick. I think Kaepernick's a Harbaugh guy. And
he's the last one.
He's the last one of the Harbaugh guys. And then you look over at the Redskins situation, and Snyder had during the offseason had come out and said that RG3 is the guy he wants. So I don't know if that's still a thing now. Maybe it is, but Snyder basically said that RG3 might not be going anywhere at the end of the season.
Well, that's a pretty asinine thing to say. I mean, I believe his contract is up at the end of the year, which means they'd have to re-sign him to a contract, which means that would be utterly ridiculous to sign a guy who's basically holding a clipboard.
Oh, I don't understand. Longer than, yeah.
I don't understand why you would do that. To me, cut your losses now. I don't care if Snyder and him are best friends. I know RG3 wants to play, and I know his agent will say he wants to play, which is exactly why he shouldn't re-sign with the team, and I don't think he will.
I'm inclined to agree with you. The only thing is I see a scenario where Dan Snyder goes, oh, well, if you want more money, why don't we get you more money? You're the guy. You're the mobile quarterback. We really need you to pan out.
Do you think it's all the money though, or because as long as Jay Gruden is there, he's not going to play him.
Well, that brings me to the other thing, scenario is maybe next year Jay Gruden isn't their coach, because the only saving grace for him this year is if they go around 500 or better and find some way to contend in this division. To give Snyder a reason to
also,
not fire Gruden.
A little bit of a caveat there, too, is the fact that Jay Gruden is making a lot of money as a head coach. Not that that really matters all that much, but it is a factor.
Yes. Yes, it is. But the other part of it is Jay Gruden isn't an RG3 guy. So you have that coach, that you have that owner that wants the quarterback, the coach that's like, nah, he's ineffective, and more than likely we're inclined to agree with. We've seen the scenario pan out where, you know, owner wants one thing, coach wants another, they butt heads, owner says, all right, you're done. And the owner gets his way, and it's a colossal failure. And Dan Snyder's that kind of guy. Dan Snyder is much like a trend of owners that follow Jerry Jones' path, where they just want their way. They say they care about winning, but they just want their way.
As long as Dan Snyder owns the Washington Redskins, they will not be successful, because he will not allow them to be successful.
No, he won't, and he won't bring in a coach, that's willing to do his thing, because he brings in one puppet after the other. Except this puppet is finally starting to say, I've had enough. You're killing my career here.
I don't know. Mike Shanahan didn't really take it all that well, and I think that's why he got canned.
Yeah,
I wouldn't call him a puppet.
That's the other part of what I was going to say is he either brings in a puppet or he brings in a guy he thinks is an established coach.
By the way, real quick, I know you mentioned about Pittsburgh killing whoever they face in the wild card round. Mm-hmm. As of right now, you know who Pittsburgh would be facing in the playoffs?
They would be facing the
Indianapolis Colts.
Indianapolis Colts.
You can't tell me that's not a mismatch.
A little bit of a mismatch in favor of Pittsburgh, I would say.
A little.
Indianapolis is another team that's kind of trending towards one of my bad surprises. I was thinking they were going to be the second best team in the AFC.
Everyone had them in the Super Bowl.
You pretty much hand-wrote them into the AFC championship game, but it's a combination of their line just can't block and their defense is probably one of the trending towards one of the historically worst defenses.
Well, hold on. They're not New Orleans.
They're not New Orleans. They'll never be New Orleans.
No.
But they have been so utterly awful.
The only game they showed up for was against Denver, and that probably was just because Peyton Manning was back there.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, you know, Indianapolis has been awful, and I don't know if it's the fact that Luck has been hurt. I don't know if he's regressing. I don't know what it is. I assume it's the injuries, because even though he's been successful throughout this being his fourth year, mm-hmm. He's been successful his first 3 years, obviously, you know, progressing further and further. He also has, I believe, the most interceptions or turnovers in the first 4 years of any quarterback's career.
Yeah,
which is not a good stat to have.
It's not a good stat to have. He's always kind of been a risk, like a guy that takes risks. And I would say sometimes those risks kind of go without merit. Like, he has no real reason to do them.
So did Brett Favre.
Brett Favre.
Not to throw the comparison out, but you know.
It's not a good comparison. It kind of is a good comparison, because he stature-wise, he's not Brett Favre. Story-wise, he's never going to be Brett Favre, because he's a first-round quarterback. You know, he was a top pick. He's never going to be a Brett Favre, but he does show a lot of those. He wants to be a gunslinger. He kind of wants to run all over the field. The playbook really isn't, you know, he doesn't necessarily always follow the playbook. That may be something Indianapolis has taken consideration down the road, because he clearly is a quarterback that has talent in the NFL.
I think
he makes a lot of weird choices.
The two worst things going for him, and one of them he can't help, the first one being that they've never had a running game since he's been there.
Nope.
And a running game can really take a lot of pressure off the quarterback.
Didn't they give up a first-round pick for Trent Richardson, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
They did, yeah. Yeah. And that's panned out perfectly, hasn't it?
Yeah, where is Trent Richardson now? I think just sold me a cheeseburger earlier. And the other issue is the fact that, and if you watch him throughout his entire career, he's not an accurate passer.
Nope.
Like, he continually overthrows people and sometimes will just throw the ball into the ground. I'm not saying he has McNabb syndrome, but, you know, he's not the most accurate guy.
Starting to make kind of poor decisions. I'm starting to see this. We can kind of say the same thing about Kaepernick, is that he just wasn't making great decisions, but Luck's kind of trending that way. We'll wrap up right with the overall NFL topics with the teams I'm seeing as bad surprises. We have the Eagles in the NFC, Seattle, Dallas, Detroit. If you told me Detroit was going to be 2-7, I would have sent you to a mental institution. I thought they were at least a 500 team.
No, they lost almost everyone on that defense. Literally almost everyone. They tried to replace Ndamukong Suh with Haloti Ngata.
They tried to play Moneyball, yeah.
Which is the worst thing that they could have done. And their secondary is awful. There's literally nothing left from that defense. And you take the offense from last year, it's not that different, except for the fact that Matthew Stafford has been basically being dragged around in the turf, because he's completely on the ground every single play.
Yep.
And he's not healthy. He's not making good decisions, but that's probably because he has no line to help him out there.
He's starting to get... It's a shame, because on the book, he looks like Jay Cutler, if you look at the stats. But when you watch him play, you see the guy, he's trying to make plays, he just doesn't have anything there for him.
He's never been good against good teams, but right now he's losing to bad teams, and that's worse than losing to good teams.
Yeah. We'll round out the bad NFC with San Francisco. That team's, I knew they were going to implode.
Everyone
knew that.
Not
imploding is bad. They're 3-6. It looks like Gabbert may have shocked some life into them.
Who'd they beat?
I think it was a noteworthy team.
I'm pretty sure it was Jacksonville.
Win's a win. I mean, I think at this point they'll take a win as a win. They're trying.
It was Atlanta.
That's a good win. I think at this point Tom Sewell is trying to get any win he can to try and he has the look to me as a lame duck coach. He just kind of looks like a lame duck coach, a guy that's going to be there for 1 year. Just kind of a guy that they lost Harbaugh and they were like, oh, what are we going to do now?
I feel like they're going to give him one more year. I don't think there's that prime candidate that they want to pick up.
Well, what he has going for him is he's an owner's puppet. So
yeah, and you know they
like that.
They like that over there.
We love that. And the bad NFC teams is we have San Diego. That team's kind of surprising me. I thought they would kind of be in the 500, 4-5 area competing in the AFC West.
They're the best 2-7 team you'll ever find.
Yeah, they are. it's kind of just surprised me at 2-7. I see and I go, wow.
They don't have a defense. Philip Rivers can only do so much himself.
Yep.
That's the reason why he's having such a monster year, is because he's had to
make so many plays.
Yeah, because the defense just gives up everything.
And we have Tennessee, which kind of can't
really
tell
a surprise?
You. Can't tell you. I didn't see 2-7 coming, but not at this point in the season. Or not at this point in the season do I see such a large gap between the win-loss.
Even if you expected Mariota to be good right out of the gate,
they also have a losing record.
He missed like three games, so, you know.
I had him kind of pinned as a 6-10 team, maybe a 5-11 team. I was not thinking they were going to trend towards maybe getting three wins. But that's that. And then, of course, we have Baltimore, which is just an absolute dumpster fire.
This is what happens when you lose your defense.
Yeah,
and Joe Flacco's exposed for what he is.
Yep. I'm inclined to agree with you. Joe Flacco, he's never been, and I never understood why they paid him so much money outside of he just took him to a Super Bowl and won it.
That's exactly why.
But he didn't deserve it. I was arguing with people on Facebook. Just because you have a Super Bowl ring and you had one good year does not make you an elite quarterback.
No, but the market dictates it, so there's nothing we can do.
Bada bing, bada
don't get me started. We could do a whole episode on the quarterback market.
Yes. We'll have many episodes like that, Sean. This upcoming weekend, Thursday night, we have an exciting one between the Titans and Jaguars. Snooze there. We have Rams and Ravens, another snoozer going down. Have an interesting game. We have Panthers, Redskins, Broncos, and Bears is the one you said you might want to keep an eye on. Monday night.
Yeah, that might be upset alert.
The Monday night game, we have Patriots and Bills. Another Sunday one, we have the Falcons and Colts. That might be an interesting one to watch as well. Oh, and can't forget Bengals and Cardinals. That's a Sunday night game.
That it is, yes.
That is going to be a good game to watch, because if there's any game that I think is a big test to what the Cincinnati Bengals can do, it's Sunday night, and I think that's going to be a fun game. And of course,
it's in Arizona, I believe, right?
It is in Arizona, which is why I call it a test, because Cincinnati on the road in Arizona, a team that plays very well at home.
On a short week.
On a short week. Like to see how they play. So kind of switching gears. Oh, one last comment is, and the only reason I say the Monday night game, and I think New England's going to run away with this one, but anytime Rex Ryan's in a Monday night game, anytime it's prime time, he always says something really ridiculous right before the game to give that other team a poster material. He's going to do it this week. We all know he's going to do something with Deflategate.
Is it a primetime game?
It's Monday night.
Oh, it is. Okay. Okay. Yep. I did not know that. Great. As you can see, I rarely watch Monday Night Football because I can't stand the broadcasting on ESPN.
You don't like the broadcasting excellence of John Gruden?
No, I don't.
I think you're one of many, Sean.
The actual big matchup for the 4 o'clock game is Green Bay Minnesota.
Yeah,
it's basically right now. It's you know, I believe if Green Bay does eke out a victory, I think they take back possession of first place.
No, they already have possession of first place.
No, Minnesota is in first place.
Oh, Green Bay wins. Yeah, they have a first place. If Minnesota wins, I think then that kind of writes the season off.
Because this is the first game that they're having, so it would be the first tiebreaker.
Yep.
So Green Bay would then take okay.
I got it. So that's kind of how it is. This is kind of a semi-big week. There's some big games you might want to watch, so you might want to flip your channel for that. Now let's switch over to baseball. Not going to talk too much about baseball because it is the offseason. This will be our final little sport to cover. But there have been 9 trades this offseason so far.
That's a lot. I mean, they did just have the owners' meetings.
They did just have the owners' meetings, so things are going to heat up again.
But what were some of these trades?
Okay, so technically the first trade wasn't really big. Minnesota Twins send a minor league catcher to the Diamondbacks for minor league first baseman. The New York Yankees made a small one, sent in a second baseman, minor league pitcher. Then the first big trade, kind of, not a lot of people are going to talk about this. Twins send Aaron Hicks to the Yankees for John Ryan Murphy. I call that a big trade because I was kind of thinking the Yankees were high on John Ryan Murphy. I thought they really liked him. I didn't think they were going to go and kind of dump him for a fielding outfielder.
To me, that's a pretty average trade. I don't really see that helping anyone in the long term.
I think for the Yankees, it gives them a young outfielder, something they don't really have a lot of. Gardner's not going to give you a full season. He's always kind of getting banged up a little bit.
They also have too many outfielders.
They do have too many outfielders, which is why I think Hicks starts the year in AAA unless they like his speed, which I don't think they really need.
No, they got Gardner. They're fine.
Yeah, they got Gardner until he gets hurt, and then I think Hicks is kind of like they're trying to play money ball with Hicks. And I don't get it.
Or maybe they're just trying to resell him when the trade deadline comes around. Maybe think
build him up. Yep.
I don't know.
For something. That's not a bad idea. They have a lot of needs, and I think maybe if you can build up Hicks enough in the system, make him look good in the majors, you can probably get a decent starting pitcher for him.
I don't know.
They need someone to replace CC.
Probably won't work, but you never know.
It never works. The Yankees are kind of spiraling out of control. Then we have big trade number one, Joaquin Benoit to the Seattle Mariners for a host of minor leaguers. It's kind of a shock that Padres did that, but I think it's a good buy for the Mariners.
Yeah, Benoit is a pretty good closer if you want to put him in the setup role. If you already have a closer, it would be good. Not that I'm not saying that Seattle does have one. It's just weird that Seattle would be of all teams going out to get a closing pitcher. It doesn't make sense to me. Like they got more issues than just a closing pitcher.
Yeah, I think if anything, this is trying to 100% shore up their bullpen. I've always loved Joaquin Benoit. I think he's one of those guys that he's just wherever he goes, he's always effective. He's been on I want to say he's one of those. He's starting to bounce around a lot. He's gonna end up with like 8 or 9 major league franchises.
Hey, ask Detroit what they think of Joaquin Benoit.
They ain't too high on him. Then we have a big one. This one kind of shocked me. The Braves deal Andrelton Simmons to the Angels for Eric Ibar and a couple of minor leaguers.
To me, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
It doesn't make a lick of sense at all for the Braves. No, it does not.
Because realistically, I mean, they're basically the same player. Like, straight up, they're the same player. One's a couple years younger, but as far as, like, statistics go and fielding, they're the same player.
Yep.
So what did you do this for?
I don't really understand, because I thought the Braves were kind of in rebuild mode. I thought Simmons was the kind of guy they were going to pair him up. Him, Freddie Freeman were going to be those guys they want to build the team around. It shocked me kind of, because if anything, you gave LA a little bit more than what you're getting back. Eric Ibar has issues. He has a lot of injury issues, and there's nothing in the Angels system. Even I could have tell you, as a guy that studies minor league systems religiously, the Angels have the worst minor league system in baseball. They have the worst it's in baseball prospectus called their minor league system one of, if not the worst in baseball. And that's that they put the Phillies above them, and the Phillies have nothing. So
do you think people know that they didn't draft Mike Trout? Do you think people know that?
The Phillies didn't draft Mike Trout?
No. The Angels didn't draft him. He was actually a trade. Do you think people know that? I don't think people know
that. I didn't
that.
Even know that.
You didn't know that?
I did not know that.
Do you know who originally drafted him or was going to use that original draft pick?
Who?
The Yankees.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Mike Trout should be a Yankee right now, but he's not.
He should be a Yankee, and he should be that team should be. Yeah, there's a lot of players that team should still have. That's the Yankees formula. But that's a pretty good note, Sean. I did not know that.
That's what I'm
Props
here for.
Props to you, my man.
What other trades did we have?
So Simmons trade the very next day.
There's a big one that I know we haven't gotten to.
The very next day, the Padres in Boston make a flip. Padres basically get a small farm back for Craig Kimbrell to the Red Sox.
Now, this
a player you wanted so badly on your Strohs.
I know. Well, because we need a closer, and I think he would have been the perfect closer. But yeah, this is weird. The Red Sox getting a closer. Like I guess they don't believe in what is his name?
O'Hara. Yeah.
Whatever his name is. I guess they don't believe in him. I mean, you know. It's hard to come by lefty closers, but, you know, maybe they're going to put him in the setup role. But to me, this sounds like a typical Red Sox trying to make a move for a name player. I don't think there's really any merit in here other than just making a big name move.
Yeah, we've kind of seen them over the years kind of collect closers. I believe at one point they had Papelbon and Bobby Jenks on the same team. Not saying Bobby Jenks at that point was still a closer, but
he had transitioned by then.
Yeah, he had transitioned by then, but they kind of collect a lot of like big name bullpen pitchers, and think they're bull. I can tell you the Red Sox aren't
did
trading.
They, didn't
anyone.
They win that year though?
They did. That was one of the years they won. Yes. Yeah.
I think the bigger issue lies in the fact that they're not hitting what their needs are. They have no starting rotation.
Nope.
Start there. You know?
Nope. They have no starting rotation. Hanley Ramirez and Pablo Sandoval had probably two of the worst years I think they've ever had in their career.
That can be fixed. I mean,
that
you
can
have
be fixed.
You
but
have the guys there already. You can work on them, but you don't have a starting staff. You know, the last
which
year
is, which
they
is
were in this.
Why I think you have to look at that offense, which has bats, and think we can sign a guy and flip one of these guys. You can probably get something back for Pablo Sandoval, a decent starting
contract.
Pitcher.
I mean, you'd need like. A big market team to take them on.
There's any team that could eat money into the Red Sox. Now, you're right. It wouldn't make any sense to sign a guy and flip him the next year, but we've seen it before. They need to figure out somehow, and obviously they're kind of penny pinching on the rotation. I think they may go after David Price. I'm not 100% sold on that. We'll see. We'll get to the free agent aspect.
I don't know if they're penny pinching pinching on starting pitchers. I think what they honestly, and this is the same issue they had last year during the offseason, instead of actually getting real pitchers, they went for Band-Aids just to, you know, patch up.
Yeah.
But the problem is that you tried to make a guy like Wade Miley be your number three. And I'm sorry, but that doesn't work. My question is, where are these farm system guys that they're supposedly have in their developmental system? Where are they? How come no one's been brought up and been at least a little successful in as a starting pitcher for the Red
Sox?
Yeah,
they have. They've had. It's kind of ironic they hired Ruben Amara to be their third base coach, because they're kind of doing a lot of Ruben Amara things where they just kind of hold guys down And then they're slowly bring them up, and by the time they bring them up, they're good.
I just don't understand where these. I mean, last year should have been the perfect example. Bring you're out of it. Bring guys up, see what they got, mm-hmm. and then make a decision later. But they didn't do that. I don't know why.
It's weird. Free agency really hasn't started yet, but they haven't been linked to any pitcher. If anything, I'm hearing kind of murmurs. They're going to take tabs on Chris Davis, which doesn't make any sense to me.
It makes perfect sense to me.
Why? They have enough first baseman caliber players.
No, they don't. I mean, they really don't have a first baseman.
They use last year they used Sandoval at first.
He was a third.
He was a third, but they flip flopped him.
Well, only on specific games.
For a little bit, they had Napoli, I believe, and I think they got rid of Napoli.
No, Napoli had been gone for a while by then.
Really?
Damn. Yeah.
All right, getting back to the trades. Diamondbacks, Seixend, the Phillies. Pretty good pitcher, Jeremy Hellickson. Still rookie of the year. Had a couple of bad years, but he's still a rookie of the year guy.
I don't know if he's... to me, he's transitioning into a bullpen guy. So, hey, good luck.
You know what? At this point, we'll take anything. And, of course, the recent big deal, the Mariners get involved with another one. This time with a division team, the Rangers. They get Lenny's Martin and a minor leaguer named Anthony Bass to Seattle in exchange for Tom Williamson, a minor leaguer, and a player to be named. So as soon as they pick up Joaquin Benoit, not even 5 days later, one of their top guys in Tom Williamson is finding his way to Texas. And I kind of thought they would go for a bat with power, not Lenny's Martin.
Yeah, he's clearly not a power guy. That's an interesting trade. I don't know who it really helps, but okay.
Here's the thing about sending pitchers to Texas is that what we saw from Cole Hamels was eventually he got accustomed to that ballpark, but Texas has kind of always been known, even going way back when, pitchers go there to die, kind of. It's bizarre. It's kind of changed over the years, but their ballpark's not very pitcher-friendly, and it reflects in their stats, and it reflects in the way they pitch and go about things.
I also think, and this is totally off-topic a little bit, but I also think there's something else going on with Cole Hamels. I don't know what it is, but that's for another topic for another time.
I kind of see where you're going with that. But I think for Seattle, you get a center fielder that can run, could be a leadoff type guy, more of a platoon player. I think Texas wins this because you get a decent reliever on paper, but again, you put him in that ballpark, Williamson.
So
that working.
What moves did Houston make so far?
Houston has not made any move aside from the Colby Rasmus coming back.
Okay, I'll take it.
Yeah, you'll take it. It was weird for him to accept that
it's
never been done before. Yeah.
But it's because he would have never gotten $15 million anywhere else.
Which, that's another issue I think baseball needs to address, is that with the rising salaries and the draft pick compensation you have to offer the players a contract, you're going to get this. And you're going to get guys that are going to get paid $15 million that would make $7 million. So it kind of goes back to the teams. I don't think Houston should have extended the offer, but hindsight's 20/20.
I honestly do think someone would have picked him up if they didn't give him the they didn't tender him. I really do. I think he would have went somewhere.
But would he have gone there for as much money?
Maybe not as much, but definitely at least.
And
double
if
digits.
That's the case, if that's the case, let's say let's play GM here. And then we'll end this thing. Let's say Colby Rasmus doesn't get the offer, goes out, gets a contract offer from, let's say, insert team. They offer him, say, $8 or $9 million. Houston now can fire back with a $10 or $12 million contract.
Yes, but that's also, you're basically...
It's risky, but you save money versus this contract.
But
it's one year.
You wait too long and then you lose the right. So it's almost like you really have to know this is going to happen. Otherwise, you're taking a huge gamble. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't with a guy like Colby Rasmus. I'm not saying that he's the end all be all, but it's better than nothing.
I'm just saying, in comparison to the Wieters situation, I think Wieters probably would have found more money someplace else.
He would have gotten a longer deal for probably more money.
He would have gotten a longer deal for probably more money. I think Rasmus's case is weird because I really do feel like the Houston Astros may have spent $5 million over what he would have gotten on the market. That's just me.
It's hard to say. It's really hard to say without him actually testing it.
Yes, it's very difficult to say. So we'll to wrap up the baseball talk, we'll talk about the current top five free agents in baseball right now. We're looking at David Price, Greinke, Cueto, Hayward, and Jordan Zimmermann. A lot of pitchers here. This is kind of the year of where teams that don't have as good of a rotation can suck, you know, can kind of suck in two guys like a Greinke and maybe a Zimmermann and complete that rotation.
I don't know why Hayward is on that list. To me, Chris Davis is a much more important free agent than Jason Hayward.
I'll give you one number, I guess you could say, aspect of him is the reason why he's so high. He's 26 years old.
Yes, but I guarantee you Chris Davis will make more money this offseason than Jason Hayward does.
He will, but he won't get the years. See, Jason Hayward could get a 10-year contract.
They don't give out 10-year contracts anymore unless you're like that guy, you know, that...
I know, but a team's going to look at Jason Hayward and say he's 26 years old, 10-year deal, he'll be 36 next time he's a free agent.
I also think part of it is that he was a product of St. Louis last year, but that's just me.
That's just you, but there's a team out there that I see making him a huge offer. Now, the Yankees. Yes, I do think the Yankees. The team I think that's going to pursue him would be the Philadelphia Phillies, only because he kind of fits. He's 26 years old. I know it doesn't make a lot of sense for the Phillies to be players in the free agent market, but at 26 years old, they have a lot of money coming off the books. It makes sense to me for Philadelphia to go and get him.
I mean, I've been saying it for years. He's basically Ryan Howard minus 30 pounds.
Yeah, I think that serves him well as an outfielder.
That's not a compliment.
We need an outfielder.
I'm sorry if you took that as a compliment.
At this point, any player that can play is worth a compliment to the Phillies. But the bottom line is that he kind of fits. He's young enough to still be a guy you can build around. I don't think he would ever come to Philadelphia. That's just me. He's not going to come to Philadelphia. More than likely, the Yankees are going to swoop in, give him a 10-year deal. He's going to sign it and be their 27th outfielder, be one of their 27th.
Yeah, Philly's got some stink on him. They're going to have a tough time getting free agents.
David Price, I'm hearing pull both ways. The Cubs and the Red Sox, the Yankees might get involved there. Zach Greinke.
Being a Houston fan, I don't want him. I'm being serious. I don't want David Price.
I don't think anyone wants David. The thing about David Price is...
No. People want David Price. Well, I'm saying don't pick him up because he's not worth it.
Because he's not a postseason pitcher.
No.
He's got that postseason rub on him. It doesn't look good. Zach Greinke, I'm only hearing about the Dodgers. Johnny Cueto, he reminds me so much. The way he pitches and the way he goes about stuff, Louis Tiant. This is going back to the 80s. Louis Tiant of the Red Sox. I think the Red Sox are going to be big players on Cueto just because he fits that like oddball Red Sox player. Him and Jordan Zimmermann.
Yeah, I could see. I mean, I don't know if Zimmermann would go to Boston, but I could see Cueto ending up there.
Zimmermann, I can see going to Boston. He's that guy, Tommy John surgery.
Honestly, Zimmermann is the kind of guy I could see like a wild card, like someone like a Arizona would pick him up or something like that.
Yeah,
I don't know why. I see it like that.
I'm inclined to agree with you. The bottom 10 of top 10 free agents loaded with bats. We got Upton, Gordon, Davis. You said Davis more than likely would go to Boston. We got Yonis Cespedes, and we got Jeff Samardzija.
Cespedes.
I don't know where Cespedes is going to go. We'll go with Upton. Upton, more than likely, I think is going to be a guy that's going to get a lot of money. He may be the highest paid offensive player.
That's
Davis
a shame.
Might contend with him.
That's a shame. Upton is not what he used to be.
He's not what he used to be, but a team's going to look at him and say right-handed pop.
Eh.
Gordon's a meh. I really don't. Gordon's kind of like a wild card too.
He's like a glorified DH now. Like, I don't know. Like, his market value has dropped.
It's dropped. Whenever you get those guys that aren't good fielders in the AL and they're just DHs, teams don't want him. And NL teams don't want him.
He'll probably re-sign with Kansas City, but, like, I don't see a big market for him.
I would be inclined to agree with you, but I don't think Kansas City is going to pony up the money he's going to ask for. And he may end up not signing until mid-February.
Yeah, we'll let him test free agency and then come back crying.
He's going to come back in like heartbroken. That's what's going to happen with him. Davis, I'm kind of inclined to agree with you, Red Sox.
Yeah, it makes sense. But
the only
you know,
team I could see being a player on maybe the Blue Jays, but I think Red Sox.
There's a ton of teams would want Chris Davis. Yeah. I just assume it's going to be a big market team because to me, the two guys that are going to go to, or the three guys that are going to go to big market teams is Davis, Price, and Greinke. They're going to command the most money. So who can pay that big market?
Before we get to Cespedes, because I have a lot to say about Cespedes, Smarja, I'm not hearing anything on Jeff Smarja, which is weird.
Who cares?
But yeah, I'm inclined to hear who cares. Cespedes, so he's a little bit of a wild card because I don't know where he wants to go or if he even is willing to sign a long-term deal.
I wouldn't sign him to a long-term deal.
But I don't think he's willing to sign a long-term deal. I think
he's kind of
accepted this role as being almost like a Gary Sheffield.
Well, that's
in a way
good for him, but again, he's another guy I don't want on my team.
He has too many issues.
He has a lot of issues. I don't want him.
You can say what you want about him salvaging the Mets season, and people say, "Oh, he should be the MVP."
Oh no, don't get me started on that.
That's an argument for another day, Sean. I'm inclined to agree with the MVP stuff, but he has the look to me like a guy that the Dodgers would make a play on. Now, hear me out. The Dodgers have made it more than clear they like spending money.
They
As
have
matter of fact,
wait, but they have him already.
$100 million in their payroll is not on their.
Well,
team.
Hold on, they have Cespedes already. His name's Yasiel Puig.
Yasiel Puig, which is
they
why
they have
I think
him.
Yanis Cespedes and Yasiel Puig on the same team wouldn't work. But if there's a team that's willing to do it, it's the LA Dodgers.
I think they're going to be so concerned with trying to re-sign Greinke that they're not even going to be focusing on Cespedes.
I don't think any of the team's going to really be focused on Cespedes. Cespedes might end up being a guy that finds himself on a team that's maybe like that next step team. Let's say, you know what I'm going to say, Houston.
Now you're just teasing me. Now, why do you have to do that?
He signs a 2-year deal with the Astros. They don't do well. They deal him. He's kind of like a low risk or not really a high risk guy. You know what you're going to get, but. $36 million, 2 years, put him in the outfield.
Moving on. No comment.
That wraps up pretty much our free agent talk. The rest of them, Wieters re-signed. Mike Leake, really not that impressive. Zobrist, Murphy,
I think Ben Zobrist is the biggest not talked about free agent name in this entire market.
He's been that way since he was with Tampa
Bay. I was hearing something about the Mets, which is weird, but I heard the Mets maybe might take an offer.
He would fit because he replaces Murphy. He can play a lot of different positions. We know they have a couple of holes on their team. His value is the fact that he's a good fielder at a lot of different positions and is a good bat.
Honestly, if there's one team that should be making the biggest push for him, it's New York. And by New York, I mean the Yankees.
The Yankees, yeah. More than likely, they won't because they look at him and they'll go, oh, we want him to play one position. I see him and I think he's a guy that fits in the Mets, that fits with the Yankees. He could fit with the Yankees. Heck, he's a Red Sox kind of guy, an oddball. You don't know where you're really going to put him. He doesn't like being in the lineup regularly. He kind of fits what Pablo Sandoval's been doing, which is third, first. Hanley Ramirez, third, right field, Zobrist, a bunch of different positions. If you have a bunch of utility players, his market is going to be dictated by who's competing for him, and I think he may end up with around $15 million in his pocket. Not very sure. Daniel Murphy's stock, I'm surprised they put him on the top 15. It's plummeted.
He had a bad World Series.
If you told me the week or the day before the World Series that Daniel Murphy wasn't a thought in the back of your head that he was going to get anything less than $15 million in the offseason, I would have called you crazy. It looks like that's going to be that way.
I really do think he's going to stay with New York, though.
I don't know if he will. I don't know if he will. And if he does, it's going to be – it has to be for cheap because the Mets don't want to spend a lot of money on him. But that's an argument for another day. We'll continue more of our sports talk next week. But coming up later this week, we are going to be talking about the WWE. We have Survivor Series coming up, Sean.
What is that? I don't know. I'm unfamiliar.
You're unfamiliar with Survivor Series?
Is this like a new thing?
It is not a new thing.
Is this the pay-per-view where they do elimination tag matches? Because I don't see any of those.
They do.
I don't see any. Where are they?
They haven't announced it yet, but they're gonna.
I don't know. I don't see any.
We'll talk about it later this week. Once again, you've been listening to Blah Blah Sports. I'm Benny Pinella, and he is Sean Smith. Sean, want to plug your Twitter?
Nope.
Neither do I.
I'm kidding. It's at @_BrackShow.
And I am Benny, and I am at the BNP _Express.
And the new episode of Blah Blah Podcast come up. Episode 33 should be dropping on Wednesday. We have some good topics for this week. So, yeah. So we'll see you then.
Locked into everything. Blah Blah. Peace out, y'all.